Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are back with the Ohio boys here, because for those not familiar, that Rick is actually in Columbus, Ohio. And Rick, I hope the weather's slightly better up there, because we are getting railed by, hopefully it doesn't interrupt this podcast, actually, railed by some bad storms.
You know, we had it a lot last week. Last 2 days have been pretty good. I even got to ride my bike a lot so far this year. I'm looking west. It's not looking so good. But the rain was so bad that 2 days after the rain, I was on the bike trail, and I went through a puddle, and I couldn't quite judge the depth. But my whole cycling motion, both my feet were completely underwater in that puddle.
Oh,
it's crazy.
That is... Yeah, that's actually nuts.
But, it's harder than you would think through a puddle. Puddle pedaling.
You're lucky you just didn't get like ejected from the bike when you were going through that stuff. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I was huffing and puffing.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, you were also just on vacation based on your Instagram photos. Is that right? Where'd you go?
Wife and I went to Iceland. And that was an adventure for us. So we talked about that, I think, the last time. And I cannot explain the beauty of that place. It is truly incredible. I really enjoyed it. It was nice. I mean, a little expensive even for Europe, but it was a really beautiful place. We hiked. We went on boats. We went on glaciers. We went up mountains. It's a really, really beautiful place. In fact, I'm rooting for Iceland in the World Cup.
I'm watching
them right now. It's not looking great, but we'll see how they do.
Yeah, we do. You know, there's a lot to talk about, obviously, in the enterprise world. And I always ping Rick before these, like, hey, Rick, you know, here we had a couple questions come in. And why don't we just talk about hardware? And Rick's like, oh, this is going to be a long one. And then he just lists off, like, do you want to talk about storage? Do you want to talk about networking? And I was like, oh, that's actually a really good thing. So maybe that's going to be the next couple episodes, because the original question that kicked all this off comes from Anthony. I'm just going to say Anthony J. He said, hey, Brad, could you ask Rick, since he works for a company that is fairly large, what his server room looks like at Veeam, where he gets to play around with the software. More specifically, they wanted to know how you handle all the different iterations of hardware and software configurations out there in your test lab to kind of prepare the next release of Veeam software to, you know, the masses.
So that's a really good question, and the short answer is there's no consistent answer, believe it or not. One thing about Veeam and the way we play is that we're very much entrenched into platforms and frameworks, mm-hmm. right? So we do a lot with APIs, and that's to an extent agnostic to individual hardwares. So there's a lot of different labs. I know that my lab, which you don't want to see a picture of due to the cable management, because I'm responsible for it. But we went through a build recently, and we kind of had this question. It's like, we support so many different things. What do we buy? And, you know, we've got a lot of factors. We've got cost. We've got space. You know, probably the best thing I ever did, believe it or not. And you can't quite tell from the picture here, but I'm in what I would call, like, Class A, Class B office space. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's not quite the right place for a data center. And then on top of that, to build that is really tough. So we actually went to a colo here in town. And then this particular one in Columbus, Ohio is really good about its connectivity. So we don't pay a lot for that, and we get a lot of high performance out of it. Now, that being said, we have a little bit of everything, but not a lot of everything. So I go through a number of different progressions on what's the right thing to buy. I have come to like software-defined storage technologies. In fact, we've kind of gone all in with VMware vSAN. That's one thing that we have liked in our lab, and it's actually serving us really well.
Can you explain why you like that so much, as opposed to a more traditional storage option?
Well, you know, we had to consider it in one regard due to cost. And what I mean by that is SANs and NASs are expensive, or can be expensive. I mean, I could flip it around. You can always buy lesser expensive storage, but it's not exactly the right way to do it. Now, we were thinking about, we do have a couple of SANs in the lab, don't get me wrong, but I wanted to go about something that was pretty big, and we have just for my group, and there's 8 people in my group, just to put it in perspective, we have, I can't even count, but I want to say around 16 hosts, something like that. Mm-hmm. And some, there's a Hyper-V cluster and the rest are VMware. And on the VMware side, we're doing vSAN. And we've got it all multi-tenant. You know, we've got a little bit of everything in there. We've got vCloud Director. We've got a lot of Veeam products. We've got different storages. But vSAN really appealed to us because, you know, when you go to say yes to build something, it was encouraging because we could really use the compute resources we already have. We didn't have to add more space because these servers had room for drives. Mm-hmm. And yet we were able to get the benefit of the storage system without having to add a completely different storage network, a completely different storage device, and the cost thereof. Now, that was actually how we built the lab to start. Now, this is a lab, but it is production for me and my team. But, you know, we went with that, and we have both VMware and Hyper-V in it, and we've got a number of different things going on, and it changes a lot. In fact, now we're doing some containerization in the same lab as well. So, you know, building a lab and or building an environment, you know, I use this lab use case because it's production for me. But the important thing to note is really set those requirements first and in the management framework. Once you have that, so many other things will be easy to answer.
Hmm. And do you have a good process for doing that? Because somebody, you know, if you're diving into networking, it's pretty easy to say, okay, we just got to connect all this stuff. But realistically, you need to think a little bit more holistically about the needs of the user, about where they're going, about where the company's going. Do you have any kind of process flows that you walk through when you think about doing this stuff?
Yeah, and my use case is a little unique because I have to literally plan that next year it'll be twice as big of what I'm doing today. Mm. Most people don't have that. I look at my 8 years at Veeam, it's 10 times as big of a company from when I started, right? So I literally have to plan on exponential growth. So that's hard to do in budgets, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the logic is, you know, getting compute, storage, networking, space, connectivity, getting all that's not a problem. It's getting the money for it that can be the problem.
Right.
So you have to find this reasonable balance of what's needed now and then in this kind of short term of the future. And one thing I've done to help me plan on that is to kind of forecast. I don't want to call it tiers or zones, but I'll give you kind of a specific example. I think we have 9 servers in one VMware cluster and 3 in the other, and they're or 4 in the other, and they're exactly the same servers and compute and everything. And what I can plan on doing is, you know, combining them if by chance I needed 13 more of the same type, or if I needed a small use case, maybe if I needed 2, I could take 2 out of the 9 and do it for that. Mm-hmm. Like if I needed to play with a new hypervisor, for example. And the other thought is, if I wanted to replace in the group of 4, that's a management cluster. If the main group of 9 needed more capacity, I could buy a new management cluster, which is just a small purchase in the thing, the scheme of things. It could be 3 or 4 smaller hosts or such. But if I bought a new management cluster, then I could take the existing 4 and put it up into the mega cluster, we call it. And then you'd have a 13 host cluster. And that could probably buy me a year, AKA budget cycles, right?
Okay.
So I might be able to get a few now, but then bulk up the bigger cluster later. The short story here, Brad, is I'm putting all my childhood Tetris skills to work, okay? And by having it all software-defined, and, you know, there's a couple of key technologies in here, you know, on these particular resources, it's VMware, but it could be that I could have the same conversation with Hyper-V and storage spaces too. But the important thing to note here is that I don't want to say the equipment doesn't matter, but the ability to be flexible with it does. And so by having some consistency and some tools in place that will help you be ready for a change in your configuration, then you'll be in pretty good shape in that regard.
Interesting. That's a really good and kind of, I don't want to say unique way to think about that, but No, that's good insight from somebody who's kind of gone through that, especially the question when he sent a nice email over about how he loves the show, and we very much appreciate that. But he was younger in his career, and he was trying to think about how to build out his first test lab, and he's as they work through software development and all that. And so hopefully that gives you a little bit of help along the way.
Yeah, test lab, that's a different one, different use case. You know, I got to send a shout out. There's a guy I know. In fact, I have my mega screen up here and I can't change can't move the camera, but maybe I'll send it over to Brad for the podcast notes. But a guy by the name of Paul Brarin at Twitter, PaulBrarin. He runs the Tinker Tri blog. He has a little spec for like the all-in-one computer super ultimate home test lab device. Shout out to Paul's blog. He's got a really good for the money, probably the best thing you can do to get started in home labbing.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Now let's just talk about networking for a second here, Rick, because this is
I'm not the expert, I'll admit. Pull the truck.
What do you guys use in that space though? Because obviously you have your labs and all that, but then what's your connective tissue for all this stuff?
Well, I personally am going to be in a decision standpoint where I want ease of use and low cost materials. And so that's going to preclude fiber.
Okay.
And it's going to make me want copper. And then on top of that, I've worked pretty hard to seek 10 gig is the standard for all things critical. You know, right. It kind of feels like I've gotten to some arguments, right, with some other technology professionals, but everybody just thinks everything's on 10 gig. But actually, that's not the case. A lot of the world is still using 1 gig in the data center. So I think that having the buy-in to do 10 gig, and the buy-in is, it's not just buying switches, but it's a mindset that we're going to just make a decision that we're only going to use 10 gig. That's important. And the investment for 10 gigabit Ethernet, you know, I'm convinced it doesn't actually give you 10 times the performance, right? It's definitely enhanced performance, but it's not 10 times the performance. You can also see some other use cases where you can walk into 40 and I believe 80 gigabit Ethernet. And I'm going to, you know, give a shout out to Cisco there, because one particular set of technologies from the UCS servers, they have this thing called the Fabric Interconnect. And, you know, Cisco has connectivity kind of better than anyone. And you can walk into some really good connectivity there. But in my use case in our lab, that's a little bit above our needs. Now, our Alliance's lab has that going on. But I will tell you, for moving data, having those type of conduits to work with really, really helps the cause. But when it comes to networking, I would, you know, my practical advice for everyone is to not – okay, I'm going to quote an analyst. You ready for it? Can we do jokes here, Brad?
Well, absolutely.
My door's closed, so I think I'm okay. I don't remember who it was, but I was at an analyst event, and they said something to the effect – I was actually walking down the hall, and the doors were open, and I heard just this part of it, which was all I needed to hear. They said fiber channel today is a lot like smoking.
Oh no.
It's not a good time to start. That was what they said. I love it. When I was doing my greenfield build, I took it pretty central to how we went about it, right? So if you're building something out today, like for storage networks, fiber channel, it's kind of a hard idea to really make sense of starting with. And I'll even say, not just forget the network, but there are so many good next generation storage technologies, even, you know, forget the software defined vSAN example, but there are so many other good storage technologies that are not even thinking about fiber channel. So it walks into, there's a lot of opportunities to do things. And in regards to the network, you should always think about, you know, cost, performance, simplicity, and what's a good idea today.
Mm-hmm. No, that is some sage-worthy advice for anybody trying to try. I keep going back to that analogy that you just said about Fibre Channel and smoking, and
It's pretty good,
it
actually.
is. I'm trying to think if there's a better analogy, but I can't come up with one. That's
I'm going to try not to laugh the rest of the show. Maybe the thunderstorms out here will, they're coming in now, so I apologize if I lose the internet.
No, that's I can hear it banging upstairs. It's I actually was in New York this morning. This is you've probably experienced this before. I was only gone for 24 hours. I left my house yesterday. Well, I guess 30 hours technically, but I left my house yesterday morning, flew to New York for a couple meetings, and I flew back home this morning. And I gotta tell you, it feels like I've been gone for a week, but I've barely been gone. I have no idea why, but.
Yeah, I've done that. The thing that makes the difference is the overnight. If you would have
Yeah.
stayed put, it wouldn't have been so bad, like up and back in the same day. But that's actually a good way to do it, so you don't make yourself have such a late night last
Yep.
night. I've got a whole set of vernacular here. The dirty day trip, I've done that, where you leave early, go to the West Coast, do your thing for the day, take the red eye back, and you feel like crap that same day. But I've done it, so.
Yeah.
There's a, but I know what you mean. Like, it feels like you've been gone forever and everything's a mess. And I've been there for sure.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an episode in our future. I don't like to use the word travel hacks, but we both you more than I do. You're one of the few people that do that live on that road quite a bit, and you can take some crazy trips too. Like you go way over into the APAC regions and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we could definitely do a tech travel preparedness
Yeah.
episode. And everything from the technology to just, managing yourself, and it is tough. And I don't get to fly business class either. So it's like I have to rest and manage my sleep and change it up. But I have become effective at it. And it's kind of funny because when I started, I used to always forget something. You don't even want to know how many pair of dress black shoes I have at home because I kept forgetting. And but now I'm good. I don't have any mix-ups and no surprises. And I don't buy like souvenirs either, so I keep
Sure.
it simple, run light. But yeah, I'd love to definitely focus on that for a topic.
Yeah, because there's a lot to it, especially for people who travel just intermittently, just trying to do like I'm at to the point now where I look ahead to the plane that I'm going to be on. That way, that pretty much determines what bag I'm going to take, because
Oh,
this
I'm
was.
very particular to that. You have to think about aircraft types. I don't like connecting in that airport,
Yep.
or what is it getting in too late? I'm borderline diva in that department, so I'm with you, Brad.
Yep. It's Yeah, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, otherwise we'll cannibalize the next episode. But Rick, you got anything today for the Rick's Dish? Anything on the travel agenda? Anything going on at Veeam's World? Anything going on in your personal life that you just want to get off your
No.
chest?
Not big. I'll hit a number of small points, really. Probably by the time this goes live on the internet, we'll have Veeam will have a small update that goes out. Just FYI, the latest semi-annual channel updates from Microsoft. So the Spring Creators update and what we used to call RS4. Those Windows 10 and Windows Server updates, those will be supported with Veeam, basically all products. And
Very
then
nice.
The latest vSphere platforms as well are going to be supported. So, platform support. So this is part Veeam FYI, but also part Dish. And I want to highlight something. It's bugging me, Brad, that I talk to a lot of people who aren't updating operating systems. They're not staying current. And when I say updating, I'm not talking about like Windows updates, just for patching and such. I'm talking about people still today explicitly deciding to de deploy 2008
Oh,
and
ooh, ooh.
R2 and things like that. And I'm like, we really ought to not do that anymore, at least be 2012 or
Sure.
Windows Server 2016, et cetera. So it's like, I've talked to a lot of people that don't have the, I don't know, the drive to stay current on net new deployments. And I kind of take quite an issue with that, because if you take the mainstream Windows, like
Yeah.
not the semi-annual channel release, so like the Windows 10 and then Windows 8, 8.1, that stuff moves pretty quick. And even on the server side, it moves quick. But in the scheme of things, it's not that quick. You've got a couple years between these milestones. And the fact that people – I heard one group say something like, oh, Server 2016 is not permitted. What? And I'm like, not supported in their own IT practice. Yeah. And I'm just like, we're 2 years past its availability. We really ought to think about a more modern way of doing things. And I'd love to maybe get someone else on the podcast that defends that practice. But yeah. It really, really bugs me. And it stresses me out. So it's part FYI Veeam and then a little bit longer rant. That's one thing I want to highlight. But I got into a little Twitter argument recently about that type of stuff. And the other thing kind of going on that is worth sharing is I think that I go back and forth on the cloud, meaning I go, I come, and I stop. Then I come back and I do more. It's not like I'm indecisive. I'm all committed to cloud, whether it be Azure, Amazon, or Dark Horse Cloud yet to reveal its head. But I really am starting to see a lot of organizations kind of jump on the platform as a service type of data approach, mm-hmm. where it's SQL natively in Azure or SQL natively in Amazon. And people are building apps around that kind of stuff. And I think as a complete opposite of some of the entrenched that are stuck on 2008 R2 and such, I also am going to applaud organizations that are really going for modern apps built on modern data sources, modern platforms. And I think that's pretty cool. So I think that, I think the kind of the classic example of choosing the right platform for a critical app was actually given to us by Microsoft. If we look at what happened with Exchange and Office 365, because organizations could consistently agree that Exchange and email collaboration is one of the most important apps that they have. Mm-hmm. Yet now this attractive option with Office 365 and then OneDrive and SharePoint takes some of your biggest problems right away from you. Some of your largest storage and most critical tier of storage, you can run that in a software as a service offering. And what I'm trying to wonder is if that same model is going to appear for the databases. Hmm. And because I've talked to many admins who had such specific designs around Exchange and so many terabytes and petabytes of tier one storage allocated to it. And now it's, I don't want to say it's just gone away, but it's not that problem on premises. And those early adopters of that were good in the sense of they had to work hard to get there, and that's great. But now we might be at the verge of that for SQL Server and other database types. And I think that if any of the listeners are in kind of those decision moments for net new applications or mm-hmm. if you have migrations, these types of things might be something to think about as alternative platforms yet today.
That's good stuff. And just one point to highlight, too, when you're talking about rolling out older software, there's a competitive advantage, too. If you're going head-to-head with your competitor and you're rolling out 08, just pick your product, and somebody else is running 2018, pick your product. They're going to have better performance, they're going to have better security, they're going to have more features. And it's truly just a competitive advantage at that point, rather than just saying, we've got 2008 rolling out, let's just roll that out continuously. Just something to think about as well.
Or even just the serviceability advantage. And what I mean by that is if I were to deploy something today on Windows Server 2008 R2, mm-hmm. in probably a shorter amount of time, I'm going to be required to do something with it. Whereas presumably I'd have a little bit more shelf life with the 2016 type of server OS. But, I'm not saying pick up and migrate everything that's out there. But for net new deployments, at least, give a good serious thought to some of the latest platforms.
For sure. Rick, if people want to contact you, what's the best way to go about reaching out to you?
Ooh, well, at Twitter. Twitter is the Twitter service. At Rick Vanover on Twitter is a good place to get me. I do hang out a lot on Twitter. That's the one thing that no matter how many notifications come in, I look at them all. Brad's great at Twitter, by the way, too, at BD Sams. And you're right. I did see your picture. You were in New York because the one, whatever that triangle building
The
is, you had
Flatiron.
posted.
It's my
There
favorite.
you go. Yeah, so I saw that. So yeah, welcome back. Also, just rick.van over at veeam.com. You can throw me an email. I'll jump in there as well. But no, just always happy to talk about all things tech. And unfortunately, I think I always have an opinion.
Well, at least it's an informed opinion, rather than just screaming into the wind. And for that, we appreciate you, one, stopping by, taking time out of your day to knock this out of the park. And folks, I think that about wraps it up for today. If you have any other questions, don't hesitate to reach out. We'll catch you right back here next time on the Enterprise Dish.